Hello and welcome to Ask the Vet. My name is Beth Broom. I'm your host of this lovely every third Thursday show at 4:30 here in KDNK. I just want to remind everyone before we get too into the show that this is a call-in show, and today I have sitting here with me in the studio Dr. Liz Foster. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Beth.
Dr. Foster works at Alpine Animal Hospital, and she's going to be sitting here for the next 30 minutes, available to answer any animal-related questions. So please feel free to give us a call. The number is 963-2976. Anything about animals, it doesn't have to be what we're discussing today. Just a reminder. So I think October is pain month, is that right?
Pain awareness.
So we're going to start with that as the topic for today. Just I think that's a broad topic. So I tend to start with dogs, but I was thinking maybe we would start. Although last week I think we started with cats. We did a lot of cat cat talking
last week.
So let's
cats are
start,
exciting.
Or last month, excuse me. So let's start with dogs. I think that one of the first things before we talk about the types of pain and all that is the talk to me about the misconception that my dog isn't in pain, and what do people. How do animals communicate pain to us? Because I feel like we often hear, oh, well, he just seems okay. Mm-hmm. He's not painful. Mm-hmm. I think, obviously they can't speak. So what do people look for to recognize, we'll start with dogs, that their dog would be experiencing some pain?
Yeah, so a common thing that we hear is, well, he's not in pain, but he's limping.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
we hear that a lot. And folks, I've got a news flash for you. If they are limping, they are in pain.
Yes.
I wish that it wasn't that way, but it is. So number one is if a dog is limping or holding up a paw or has a little bit of a change in gait, I would say one of your first guesses should be that your dog is painful.
That's good. That's good information because I feel like people are looking for some vocalization.
Yes.
Would you say? I mean,
yes, I agree. And unfortunately, dogs are not going to vocalize if they're in pain. So us humans, we're kind of wusses, and we're going to complain.
Oh, you might be, but I'm not.
Well,
I'm just kidding.
We're going to complain. We're going to tell everyone that we're in pain and how much it hurts, and that is just not how dogs deal.
No.
It's very rare that you're actually going to hear them cry out in pain unless it's kind of a sudden event. So if they're in chronic pain, they're not going to whimper. They're not going to cry. They're not going to tell us. Dogs are super stoic animals, so they are going to pretend they're not in pain until they absolutely cannot anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
So what is that? You talked about a gait change or holding up a paw. What other indications? We can just talk about signs of pain, and then we can talk more about what types of pain we're looking at. So what beyond the gait change and holding up a foot, what other signs and symptoms would you expect to see with a dog that may have some pain?
Yeah. So in any dog, it could be a change in how active they are. That's number one. So if you see somebody that's a little bit more lethargic or just not wanting to get up as much, not wanting to exercise, that's one of our differentials for that. Another thing is when they are in pain, dogs will lick. They will lick a paw, they will lick a hip, they'll lick a front leg. A lot of dogs will lick their front legs when they're in pain anywhere on their body. So it doesn't always mean they're itchy. It doesn't always mean that, oh, he's just anxious. That actually could indicate pain. So that's another one. Excessive panting and unable to get comfortable. Panting is kind of a universal sign in a dog that there could be something wrong. Now, our dogs definitely pant when they're just having fun and exercising. But if it's panting and you're like, why in heaven's name are you panting?
Right, it's not hot.
Yeah, it's not hot. And you didn't just get done exercising, it could be pain.
Gotcha.
I'm not saying 100%, but it could be pain.
Right. Oh, we had a call.
Looky here.
Love it. All right. Hello.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Well, I have a kitty question. Is that okay?
Please. We love kitty questions.
We love kitties.
No, it's great. Go for it.
Well, my cat is out of sorts.
Oh.
And I'm wondering if... Do cats respond to the change of seasons?
Is this a really quick? How old is your cat?
4 or 5.
Okay.
Okay. And by out of sorts, what do you mean?
Well, she's sleeping a lot.
Okay.
She's eating. She's drinking. She's doing her thing with the cat box. But she's sleeping a lot.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's because, I mean, I've been on a major mouse eradication program here.
Okay.
At the house.
That. Be specific in what you mean
by that.
What
are you doing to get rid of the mice?
Well, I'm, you know, plugging up holes. I'm using a little peppermint oil, and I've been using Mouse X, but not in any place where she can get it.
Okay.
And she's kind of a nonviolent cat.
Okay. Yeah.
She'll chase the mouse, but she doesn't, or she'll stand there and show me where they're coming in,
mm-hmm.
but she doesn't, like, get them and kill them.
Would she eat one if it was dead already?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
She does not. She leaves them for me to find.
And is she indoor and outdoor?
Nope. She's just indoor.
Indoor only.
Okay. I'm taking her to get her claws trimmed tomorrow, and I'm wondering if that can, like, have an effect on them if their claws are, like, really long.
These are all really good questions. The first thing that I would say is important to do would be to get rid of the rodenticide, the rodent killer. If it's anywhere in your house where it's even remotely possible that the animal get into it, this is for anybody, do not have it in your house. Because
it's not poison.
Okay. Okay.
You know, I don't know. Is that because I had to resort to it. Usually I don't.
Right, right.
I
sure.
I had to resort to it because I just had so many mice in the past month.
Yeah, mice are bad for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll get rid of it. She can't get to it.
And how long has she been out of sorts, by the way? I don't know if you mentioned
that.
A couple days.
Okay, yeah, so I wouldn't necessarily attribute it to a change in season, you know, just because it is still pretty warm, and so I think that that's unlikely. I think that it's definitely time to have her looked at by your veterinarian, you know, and it's possible to hopefully change your nail trim appointment to a regular appointment, and they can probably evaluate her, listen to her heart, take her temp, all that good stuff, and give you a better idea of what's going on, because I don't like to hear that we're lethargic. That's a kind of a very vague way of a cat telling us that something is just not wrong.
Yeah,
just not right.
It's interesting because, you know, on the topic of, we were talking about pain, mm-hmm. and lethargy being one of the main, can be a sign with cats in particular.
Yep.
The lethargy can be a sign of any number of problems that shouldn't be ignored because they don't really give us a whole lot of signs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're wise to be a cognizant of that behavior and definitely get that physical exam.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, so
all right.
Good call on your part. Nice catch.
Thank you. You're welcome. Have a good day.
Bye.
Thanks. I just want to remind everyone, this is a call-in show, so Dr. Foster is here. For any animal-related questions, we just answered that cat question. So the number here is 963-2976. Anything at all, give us a call. So back to dog pain, and then we can go from there. But what were we saying? I would like to.
We were talking about panting.
Panting.
And, yeah, we went from there.
Panting doesn't always mean hot.
Yeah, general, just ways that they tell us they're in pain.
Right. Yeah. So, what's the next step as far as, you know, let's talk about what are the reasons or what are some of the causes for pain in dogs, both acute and chronic?
Mm-hmm. So, of course, we think of just regular strains or sprains. Mm-hmm. We call those soft tissue injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of like nonspecific. Sometimes we can kind of figure out a joint or what leg that they're in. But mm-hmm. dogs, again, they're very stoic. And when they come to the veterinarian, they are as stoic as possible mm-hmm. for the most part. And so sometimes we can only identify what leg it's in. And that's okay
mm-hmm.
because even from there we can identify you know, maybe what joint it's in. Hopefully that's the goal. But
right.
So that's number one, is a strain or a sprain. And typically rest, just like us, should help that.
Right.
But there are things your veterinarian can do to help that as well. Other things, orthopedic injuries, or something that has to do with the bones and the way that the bones work. So those are common in dogs. We see them a lot in knees. Dogs get similar injuries to humans. They tear their CCL, where humans tear their ACL. Causes a lot of pain and stability and discomfort. They could also have kneecap problems,
right,
in smaller breed dogs.
Right.
Common shoulder and elbow injuries in larger breed dogs.
Right.
We can see some congenital stuff, unfortunately.
Now, in a younger, healthy dog who is acutely becoming limping, or some type of change in gait, whether it be a front leg or a back leg, how long is it okay to allow your dog to limp before you decide to take it to the vet?
It's a good question.
I mean, so, unless you see like an obvious bone protruding.
Well, sure.
Or some bleeding,
it's like
or some kind
injury,
of, right, the limb is just dangling.
Yeah. So if you're like, oh gosh, you're just kind of gimping around. And if you identify that, however, if you identify it and the dog is still eating, drinking, going to the bathroom and overall acting themselves, I think it's very reasonable to give it 24 hours.
Okay.
As long as you're comfortable monitoring them.
Right.
However, if the dog is limping a lot and you find that they are, gosh, they're really not getting up to eat, or they're panting all night long and could not sleep. All of those are, they're subtle signs of saying, hey, I do not feel right,
right,
and I need help.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it's reasonable to give them 24 hours, but I also think it's important to say, okay, when do I need to consider further intervention from the vet?
Right. Just remind everyone, call-in show, Dr. Foster's here, wants to take any questions you have regarding animals, small or large. Hey, if you have a large animal questions, you know, why don't you just throw it out there? You never know.
Yeah, we'll see what comes out of this brain.
The number here in the studio is 963-2976. So, just because I think it's important to maybe cover this part of that conversation, is there any medication that you can give to your dog? So my dog is now limping and I want to do something
right now, tonight.
Maybe I don't want to go to the vet. I want to wait 24 hours, or maybe I do want to go to the vet, but I can't get in. It's after hours, whatever.
Right.
Can I give them anything?
Excellent question. And absolutely not.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So, you know, there are drugs out there that we know are super toxic to dogs and cats. No, in cats.
Yes.
Such as ibuprofen.
Yes.
Okay. So ibuprofen.
Absolutely not. Very bad.
Never give that to a dog.
Never.
Any over-the-counter medications that you're not sure are legit, don't give that to your dog.
Right.
Okay. So on top of that, we have a lot of people that give aspirin.
Right. I was just going to say, you know, there was a time when aspirin was
absolutely,
almost even recommended.
It's recommended,
yeah.
And, you know, there are times in veterinary medicine where we will recommend it, but it's typically not for pain.
Yeah.
It's typically for something different. And the reason being is that, I don't know about you guys, but I'm not a risk taker.
I mean, I am, but not with my dogs.
I am
dogs.
Not.
Not with
I'm
my dogs.
Not in all areas of my life.
I am.
But the problem with aspirin is if you give it, the potential for stomach ulcers goes up.
And that's a big deal.
That's a big deal. It could be life-threatening in an animal. And so you can give 20 milligrams. I'm making this up. I can't even remember how many milligrams are in an aspirin tablet.
That's a good question.
You can give 20 milligrams to an 85-pound dog, and he will develop a very large stomach ulcer and be in bad shape. You can also give 20 milligrams to a 17-pound beagle, and she'll be just fine.
Right.
So
there's just no way to know.
It's just really unpredictable. So, again, I just don't recommend aspirin for that reason.
And we can do better in a vet hospital.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Yeah, we can do so much
better.
Does
it even really do that great for pain control?
You know, I think that there is a lot of evidence that it does help maybe a little bit. But, I think if we're going to give them anything, let's give them something safe.
That will work.
That will work, yes. Because there's so many better things for us to use. So if in doubt, don't give anything. And the cat
world as well.
The cat world, goodness gracious, no.
Right.
Don't give anything to a cat.
Because if you think dogs are touchy with medications over the counter, cats are 10 times
cats
worse.
Cats are 10 times worse. Yeah. So we don't really recommend self-medicating any of your animals unless you are 100% positive that your veterinarian has approved. And it's for your animal's sake.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's good. I just wanted to cover that because, you know, obviously times have changed. Things
sure.
are different.
Yeah.
And recommendations change along the way.
Sure.
So that's important. And it's also important to know how long is appropriate to wait before going to the vet. So mm-hmm. those are some good things. Mm-hmm. So I think another thing when we discuss pain, you know, I think we were hitting on more of the acute injury
yeah.
type pain.
Yeah.
To speak to the people who have seen your pets,
yeah.
At what point do you think it's important to discuss pain control? And what does pain look like in a senior dog who is slowing down mm-hmm. and aging?
Sure. So we can expect senior dogs to, or a dog, to start showing signs of age probably, I would say, around 8 to 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And it varies. But what they start doing is it's the classic, oh, he's just slowing down, but he's
right.
not in pain.
Right.
Likely, you're kind of half right. Yes, they're slowing down. They might not want to be as active. But part of that might be because they are in a little bit of discomfort or pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's number one, is we do see that they're slowing down in general.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is they could be slow to get up. So typically, or stereotypically, that's in the hind end. Everyone wants to say, oh, he's got hip dysplasia, or he's got this or that.
Yeah.
Most dogs don't have hip dysplasia.
No, everyone.
No.
Little known fact.
They don't have it. But they do have arthritis.
Yes.
And they also could have knee problems.
I mean, it's not yes and a good thing.
No, but it's actually not usually hip dysplasia. However, they can have pain, slow yeah. to get up or down. I mean, that's them being like, you know, it's kind of, picture your grandma or your grandpa slowly lowering themselves into
how
a chair.
I feel that way.
Yeah,
some
I know.
Mornings, and
I know.
I'm not even that old.
Same. I feel like that every morning.
Well, you're older than I
yeah,
am.
Yeah, I am.
So.
So that's number two. So that can be painful.
Mm-hmm.
And then just them kind of, if your dog gets up from rest, and if they're not, okay, so number one, they're slow to get up. And then you're like, ooh, that was a tough one. And then you see them walking around and they're all of a sudden, like they're immediately panting. So they're walking around and they're panting
mm-hmm.
and they're slow and they're kind of just dragging themselves around. Sometimes they warm out of it. Other times, again, as they get older, they do not warm out of it. But
right.
then they'll come to you and they'll ask for a treat and they'll eat their dinner. And
they want to go for a walk.
They want to go for a walk.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because you know what? That's what makes them happy.
Right.
That is a sign of pain.
Mm-hmm.
That's arthritis in a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of more towards the really bad arthritis, we'll see at night they just cannot get comfortable.
Right.
They are panting and pacing and panting
right.
and pacing, and they cannot get comfortable. Or they lay down and they get up again, and then they're panting. And it's just this never-ending circle.
Right.
That, in a senior dog, could 100%, one of the first things we think of is, okay, is that arthritis?
Yeah.
And they could be showing it all over their body. They could also be showing it one leg or the other, or mm-hmm. one side or the other. I mean, it's variable.
I think, would you say, not to interrupt, excuse me.
Oh, no. No, go, right. you go for it.
Thank you. By the way, this is a call-in show. We don't have too much more time left here. If you do have questions for Dr. Foster, the number here is 963-2976. Can be any animal-related question. Animals today. She'll take humans later. Just kidding. I think it's important to say that, or maybe for you to speak on the fact that there's a lot of options for pain control
mm-hmm.
and that we don't have to just let our dogs be in arthritic discomfort. And also maybe if you would touch on the fact that not only are there a lot of options, but that cost, you know, it doesn't always yeah. have to be super expensive to be able to do something.
No, it doesn't. So if you come in and see us, there are medications that we are tried and true. We feel confident in prescribing.
Mm-hmm.
And we will probably prescribe to you
mm-hmm.
to try. It's rare that we'll give you a gigantic supply of it because,
right.
gosh, if it doesn't work, we don't want you to have a bunch there. Yeah.
Right.
So we'll usually start with a week or 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
Depending on what the problem looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Other things that we will prescribe, Well, actually, let's go back to that one. The one thing that we like to consider is an NSAID, so non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drink.
Right.
That's number one. The other thing would be something to cover nerve pain. So anyone that's experienced nerve-related pain knows that it's no joke. And we are not able to say, hey, Cody, what kind of pain you got in that in those hips?
Right.
Is it nerve-related or is it? We can't say that. So
do you feel that running up your spine?
Does that feel different? And so we just assume that they're in both kinds of pain. And we have a lot of scientific evidence behind the fact that they are. And then other things that we'll recommend are supplements. We love supplements. I love a glucosamine chondroitin supplement. Anyone who knows me knows I have a favorite that I always recommend, but there's a ton of great ones out there.
Now, in humans, I tend to hear, you know, particularly to the joint, to speak to the joint supplements, that I feel like humans don't recommend it as much because they don't, you know,
they don't
human,
work.
And I
hear that all the time.
Wrong?
No, you're not wrong. That is a very, very common, or just, I mean, again, I'm not a human doctor, but my understanding is that is correct. And that kind of keeps people from being open to us prescribing them for their pets.
And so, they're not necessarily cheap.
No, they're not cheap. So why would you
want to
buy something that's not going to work? And
we,
you know, so it's understandable. And I love when people bring that up because that means that they're really thinking about it. In veterinary medicine, we have very, very solid research saying it does help.
Okay.
It does help.
And that's important to know.
Yes, absolutely. And so I'm not going to prescribe something to a dog that is not going to potentially benefit it.
Sure.
And so I think that it's important to remember that it does work in dogs and cats glucosamine chondroitin supplements, at least the ones that I have experience with, are fantastic.
Now, is there in regards to those supplements, is quality important? Is there, is it a brand name, generic? I can't use my words today. Do either of those matter?
Yeah. So, I think quality is important. The problem, the reason I like to recommend a veterinary product is because it's dosed correctly.
Right.
And so I can say, hey, take this, give him one capsule twice a day.
Right.
And you're bing, bang, boom, done.
Right. Because if you're underdosing, it's not going to be
well,
as effective.
Not even effective. Right. It's not, it's like, it's not effective.
You want to say pissing into the wind.
I
know you do.
Really
she likes that statement.
I really wanted to say that. But
I got you.
To the ocean, actually. That's what I was
going to say. Pissing in the ocean.
Yeah.
That's right. Wind doesn't make sense.
No. Ocean makes more sense. So why would you want to give them something unless it's at the proper dose? So that's one. I just, because I know what you're getting.
Right.
And number two, and I think a lot of people now take supplements, which I 100% support.
Mm-hmm.
But we all know that certain supplements are more higher quality than others.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't know what you're getting if you're just going to the store and willy-nilly taking it off the shelf.
Right.
And it's just important to remember that. I mean, what are you putting into your dog? And if you're having to stuff four pills once or twice a day down their throat, that it's a human supplement? I mean, I just think that that sounds terrible.
Right. Because also the other thing is, like, exactly what you're saying is that when the dosing's appropriate, you know, they're considering
how many
pills you're going to have to give the dog. And it's a lot less if it's dosed appropriately.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And it's easier. And we have chewable forms. We have easy forms to give them. It's just
beef-flavored
treats. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just so much easier, I think.
Yeah.
And then we know what they're getting.
Yeah.
We know what's in it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you feel the same for cats.
Oh, yeah. We have a really solid recommendation for cats for arthritis in terms of a supplement.
Because we think cats do indeed
get
arthritis.
Oh my gosh,
correct?
Yes, they do. And one of the more common places they get it is in their spine and in their back legs.
Mm-hmm. Back pain is a real thing for animals.
Significant in animals. And again, they don't always show us in the same way. So that's why it's important to see your vet for it.
Right. That's good. That's good. I mean, so I think that, you know, we're talking about, you know, chronic pain, which is not to be, is not to be ignored for a lot of reasons. One, we can just make the golden years of the animal so much more comfortable and happy, you know, just because they're old doesn't mean there's not something more we can do.
There's always something more we could do, whether you want it to be medications or supplements or combination of the two, CBD. Just ask your veterinarian.
Acupuncture.
I mean, anything.
Yeah. It's,
and one more thing. Cats, the way cats show us pain a lot is that they hide.
Ah, it's good.
Okay.
It's a good one.
They hide.
Yeah.
And they just are not themselves. They're sleeping more.
And that's why when the one caller we had, it's important that she recognize that.
It's a very nonspecific sign for there's something wrong. Right. Cats are even more terrible at showing us.
So yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Just if your cat is acting funny, bring it to the vet and don't wait.
No, because often I feel, correct me if I'm wrong, but I, particularly with cats, by the time they do show you something,
they're real sick.
They're real sick.
They are very, very, very sick.
Right.
So if your cat is acting funny, do not wait. Bring it to the vet.
Right.
Because they do not have the longevity of not feeling well, that dogs do.
Right. Yeah. And that's an important fact. Yeah. Any other quick?
I don't think so. Just contact your veterinarian, I guess. Yeah. I don't mind getting calls from people saying, you know, this is what he's showing. What do you think? And I'll be honest with you if you have to come in, or I'll give you my opinion.
Yeah.
And so know that your veterinarian, I think I speak for everyone in this valley, that we're more than happy to take phone calls and just help you out. We want to help. That's what we're here for.
Exactly.
And understand it. You know, if you leave a voicemail or something, we want to help.
Yeah.
So just, you know, know that.
So just to take home, there's lots of options for pain control. There's lots we can do, but, you know, remembering that, particularly with the senior dogs, but also with the acutely injured dogs. I think that wraps it up for me. Thank you, Dr. Foster,
for
coming in.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And tune in next month, the third Thursday at 4:30. It's a very odd time, so don't forget.
Don't forget.
We'll be here. Thanks for listening to Ask the Vet. Okay.